hand into the pocket of her pants and brought out a box. On it was a picture of a cowboy spinning a lariat. "Roundup candy cigarettes," it said. "Smoke just like Daddy."
"Want one? A little sugar might help your state of mind. It always helps mine."
Luke took the box and flipped up the lid. There were 6 cigarettes left inside, each one with a red tip that he guessed was supposed to be the coal. He took one, stuck it between his lips, then bit it in half. Sweetness flooded his mouth.
"Don't ever do that with a real cigarette," she said. "You wouldn't like the taste half so well."
"I didn't know they still sold stuff like this," he said.
"They don't sell this kind for sure," she said. "Smoke just like Daddy? Are you kidding me? Gotta be an antique. But they got some weird shit in the canteen, including real cigarettes, if you can believe that. All straights, Luckies and Chesterfields and Camels, like in those old flicks on Turner Classic Movies. I'm tempted to try, but man, they take a lot of tokens."
"Real cigarettes? You don't mean for kids?"
"Kids be the whole population here. Not that there are many in front half just now. Maureen says we may have more coming. I don't know where she gets her info, but it's usually good."
"Cigarettes for kids? What is this, Pleasure Island?"
Not that he felt very pleasurable just now. That cracked her up.
"Like in Pinocchio. Good one."
She held up her hand. Luke slapped her 5 and felt a little better. Hard telling why.
"What's your name? I can't just keep calling you white boy. It's like racial profiling."
"Luke Ellis. What's yours?"
"Kalisha Benson."
She raised a finger.
"Now pay attention, Luke. You can call me Kalisha, or you can call me Sha. Just don't call me Sport."
"Why not?" Still trying to get his bearings, still not succeeding, not even close. He ate the other half of his cigarette, the one with the fake ember on the tip.
"'Cause that's what Hendrix and his fellow dipsticks say when they give you the shots or do their tests. I'm gonna stick a needle in your arm and it'll hurt, but be a good sport. I'm gonna take a throat culture, which'll make you gag like a fucking maggot, but be a good sport. We're gonna dip you in the tank, but just hold your breath and be a good sport. That's why you can't call me Sport."
Luke hardly paid attention to the stuff about the tests, although he would consider it later. He was back on fucking. He had heard it from plenty of boys. He and Rolf said it a lot when they were out. And he had heard it from the pretty redhead who might have bricked the SATs, but never from a girl his own age. He supposed that meant he had led a sheltered life. She put her hand on his knee, which gave him a bit of a tingle, and looked at him earnestly.
"But my advice is go on and be a good sport no matter how much it sucks, no matter what they stick down your throat or up your butt. The tank I don't really know about. I never had that one myself, only heard about it. But I know as long as they're testing you, you stay in front half. I don't know what goes on in back half, and I don't want to know. All I do know is that back half's like the Roach Motel. Kids check in, but they don't check out. Not back to here, anyway."
He looked back the way he had come. There were lots of motivational posters, and there were also lots of doors, 8 or so on either side.
"How many kids are here?"
5, counting you and me. Front half's never jammed, but right now it's like a ghost town. Kids come and go.
"Talking of Michelangelo," Luke muttered.
"Huh?"
"Nothing."
"What?" One of the double doors at the near end of the corridor opened, and a woman in a brown dress appeared, her back to them. She was holding the door with her butt while she struggled with something. Kalisha was up in a flash.
"Hey, Maureen. Hey, girl. Hold on. Let us help."
Since it was us instead of me, Luke got up and went after Kalisha. When he got closer, he saw the brown dress was actually a kind of uniform, like a maid might wear in a swanky hotel. Medium swanky, anyway. It wasn't gussied up with ruffles or anything. She was trying to drag a laundry basket over the metal strip between this hallway and the big room beyond, which looked like a lounge. There were tables and chairs and windows letting in bright sunlight. There was also a TV that looked the size of a movie screen. Kalisha opened the other door to make more room. Luke took hold of the laundry basket, Dan Ducks printed on the side, and helped the woman pull it into what he was starting to think of as the dormitory corridor. There were sheets and towels inside.
"Thank you, son," she said.
She was pretty old, with a fair amount of gray. She pulled a folded piece of paper halfway out of her skirt pocket, then pushed it back in. Luke offered his hand, as he had been taught.
Pleased to meet you.
Maureen shook it. She seemed nice enough, so he guessed he was pleased to meet her, but he wasn't pleased to be here. He was scared and worried about his parents, as well as himself. They'd have missed him by now. He didn't think they'd want to believe he'd run away, but when they found his bedroom empty, what other conclusion could they draw? The police would be looking for him soon, if they weren't already, but if Kalisha was right, they'd be looking a long way from here. Maureen's palm was warm and dry.
I'm Maureen Alverson, housekeeping and all-around handy gal. I'll be keeping your room nice for you.
And don't make a lot of extra work for her, Kalisha said, giving him a forbidding look.
Maureen smiled.
You're a peach, Kalisha. This one don't look like he's gonna be messy, not like that Nicky. He's like Pigpen in the Peanuts comics.
Is he in his room now? I don't see him out in the playground with George and Iris.
You know Nicky, Kalisha said. If he's up before 1 in the afternoon, he calls it an early day.
Then I'll just do the others. But the docs want him at 1. If he's not up, they'll get him up.
Pleased to meet you, Luke.
And she went on her way, now pushing her basket instead of tugging it.
Come on, Kalisha said, taking Luke's hand.
Worried about his parents or not, he got another of those tingles. She tugged him into the lounge area. He wanted to scope the place out, especially the vending machines.
Real cigarettes? Was that possible?
But as soon as the door was closed behind them, Kalisha was up in his face. She looked serious, almost fierce.
I don't know how long you'll be here. Don't know how much longer I will be, for that matter. But while you are, be cool to Maureen, hear? This place is staffed with some mean-ass shitheads, but she's not one of them. She's nice. And she's got problems.
What kind of problems? He asked, mostly to be polite. He was looking out the window at what had to be the playground. There were 2 kids there, a boy and a girl, maybe his own age, maybe a little older.
She thinks she might be sick, for 1, but she doesn't want to go to the doctor because she can't afford to be sick. She only makes about 40 grand a year, and she's got like twice that much in bills. Maybe more. Her husband ran them up, then ran out. And it keeps piling up, okay? The interest.
The VIG, Luke said. That's what my dad calls it, short for vigorish. From the Ukrainian word for profits or winnings, it's a hoodlum term, and Dad says the credit card companies are basically hoods. Based on the compounding interest they charge, he's got what, a point?
Yeah. He stopped looking at the kids outside, George and Iris, presumably, and turned to Kalisha.
She told you all that? To a kid? You must be an ace at interpersonal relationships.
Kalisha looked surprised, then laughed. It was a big one, which she delivered with her hands on her hips and her head thrown back. It made her look like a woman instead of a kid.
Interpersonal relationships! You got some mouth on you, Lukey.
Intra, not inter, he said. Unless you're like meeting with a whole group, giving them credit counseling or something.
He paused.
That's, a joke. And a lame one at that. A nerd joke.
She regarded him appraisingly, up and down and then up again, producing another of those not unpleasant tingles.
Just how smart are you?
He shrugged, a bit embarrassed. He ordinarily didn't show off. It was the worst way in the world to win friends and influence people. But he was upset, confused, worried, and, might as well admit it, scared shitless. It was getting harder and harder not to label this experience with the word kidnapping. He was a kid, after all. He had been napping. And if Kalisha was telling the truth, he had awakened thousands of miles from his home.
Would his parents have let him go without an argument or an actual fight?
Unlikely. Whatever had happened to him, he hoped they had stayed asleep while it was going on.
Pretty goddamn smart would be my guess. Are you TP or TK?
I'm thinking TK.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Except maybe he did. He thought of the way the plates sometimes rattled in the cupboards, how his bedroom door would sometimes open or close on its own, and how the pan had jittered at Rocket Pizza. Also the way the trash can had moved by itself the day of the SAT test.
TP is telepathy. TK is telekinesis.
She smiled and pointed a finger at him.
You really are a smart kid. Telekinesis. Right. You're either one or the other. Supposedly no one's both. That's what the texts say, at least. I'm a TP.
She said this last with some pride.
You read minds, Luke said. Sure. Every day and twice on Sunday. How do you think I know about Maureen? She'd never tell anyone here about her probs. She's not that kind of person. And I don't know any of the details. Just the general outline.
She considered.
There's something about a baby, too, which is weird. I asked her once if she had kids, and she said she didn't.
Kalisha shrugged.
I've always been able to do it, off and on, not all the time. But it ain't like being a superhero. If it was, I'd bust out of here.
You're serious about this?
Yes, and here's your first test. First of many. I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 50.
What's my number?
No idea.
True? Not faking?
Absolutely not faking.
He walked to the door on the far side of the room. Outside, the boy was shooting hoops and the girl was bouncing on a trampoline. Nothing fancy, just seat drops and the occasional twist. Neither of them looked like they were having a good time. They looked like they were just passing time.
Those kids are George and Iris?
Yep.
She joined him. George Iris and Iris Stanhope. They're both TKs. TPs are rarer. Hey, smart kid, is that a word? Or do you say more rare?
Either is okay, but I'd go with more rare. Rarer sounds like you're trying to start an outboard motor. She thought this over for a few seconds, then laughed and pointed that finger at him again.
Good one.
Can we go out?
Sure. Playground door is never locked.
Not that you'll want to stay long. The bugs are pretty fierce out here in the boondocks. There'll be DEET in your bathroom medicine cabinet. You should use it. And I mean really slather it on.
Maureen says the bug situation will get better once the dragonflies hatch out, but I haven't seen any yet.
Are they nice kids?
George and Iris?
Sure.
I guess so. I mean, it's not like we're besties or anything. I've only known George for a week. Iris got here, 10 days ago, I think.
About that, anyway. After me, Nick's been here the longest. Nick Wilhelm.
Don't look forward to meaningful relationships in front half, smart kid. Like I said, they come and go. And don't any of them talk of Michelangelo.
How long have you been here, Kalisha?
Almost a month. I'm an old timer.
Then will you tell me what's going on?
He nodded to the kids outside.
Will they?
We'll tell you what we know and what the orderlies and techs tell us. But I got an idea that most of it's lies. George feels the same.
Iris now?
Kalisha laughed. She's like Agent Mulder on that X-Files show. She wants to believe.
Believe what? The look she gave him, both wise and sad, again made her look more like a grown-up than a kid.
That this is just a little detour on the great highway of life, and everything's gonna come out all right in the end, like on Scooby-Doo.
Where are your folks? How did you get here?
The adult look disappeared.
Don't want to talk about that stuff now.
Okay.
Maybe he didn't want to either. At least not quite yet.
And when you meet Nicky, don't worry if he goes off on a rant. It's how he blows off steam. And some of his rants are,
she considered,
entertaining.
If you say so. Will you do me a favor?
Sure, if I can.
Stop calling me smart kid. My name is Luke. Use it, okay?
I can do that.
He reached for the door, but she put her hand on his wrist.
One more thing before we go out.
Turn around, Luke. He did. She was maybe an inch taller. He didn't know she was going to kiss him until she did it. A full-on lip lock. She even put her tongue between his lips for a second or two, and that produced not just a tingle, but a full-on jolt. Like sticking a finger in a live socket.
His first real kiss. And a wilder smooch, for sure.
Rolf, he thought, so far as he could think in the immediate aftermath, would be so jealous. She pulled away, looking satisfied.
It's not true love or anything. Don't get that idea. I'm not sure it's even a favor, but it might be. I was in quarantine the first week I was here. No shots for dots.
She pointed to a poster on the wall next to the candy machine. It showed a boy in a chair pointing joyously at a bunch of colored dots on a white wall. A smiling doctor, white coat, stethoscope around his neck, was standing with a hand on the boy's shoulder. Above the picture it said, "Shots for dots." And below, "The quicker you see 'em, the quicker you're back home."
What the hell does that mean? Never mind right now. My folks were full-on anti-vaxxers, and 2 days after I landed in front half, I came down with chickenpox. Cough, high fever, big ugly red spots, the whole 9 yards. I guess I'm over it, since I'm out and about and they're testing me again, but maybe I'm still a little bit contagious. If you're lucky, you'll get the pox and spend a couple of weeks drinking juice and watching TV instead of getting needles and MRIs.
The girl spotted them and waved. Kalisha waved back, and before Luke could say anything else, she pushed open the door.
Come on, wipe that dopey look off your face and meet the Fockers.
Shots for dots. 1. Outside the door of the Institute's canteen and TV lounge area, Kalisha put an arm around Luke's shoulders and pulled him close to her. He thought, hoped, really, she meant to kiss him again, but she whispered in his ear instead. Her lips tickled his skin and gave him goosebumps.
Talk about anything you want, only don't say anything about Maureen, okay? We think they only listen sometimes, but it's better to be careful. I don't want to get her in trouble.
Maureen, okay, the housekeeping lady.
But who were they?
Luke had never felt so lost, not even as a 4-year-old when he had gotten separated from his mother for 15 endless minutes in the Mall of America. Meanwhile, just as Kalisha had predicted, the bugs found him. Little black ones that circled his head in clouds. Most of the playground was surfaced in fine gravel. The hoop area, where the kid named George continued to shoot baskets, was hot-topped, and the trampoline was surrounded with some kind of spongy stuff to cushion the fall if someone jumped wrong and went boinking off the side. There was a shuffleboard court, a badminton setup, a ropes course, and a cluster of brightly colored cylinders that little kids could assemble into a tunnel. Not that there were any kids here little enough to use it. There were also swings, teeter-totters, and a slide. A long green cabinet flanked by picnic tables was marked with signs reading "Games and Equipment," and "Please return what you took out." The playground was surrounded by a chain-link fence at least 10 feet high, and Luke saw cameras peering down at two of the corners. They were dusty, as if they hadn't been cleaned in a while. Beyond the fence, there was nothing but forest, mostly pines. Judging by their thickness, Luke put their age at 80 years, give or take. The formula, given in Trees of North America, which he had read one Saturday afternoon when he was 10 or so, was pretty simple. There was no need to read the rings. You just estimated the circumference of one of the trees, divided by pi to get the diameter, then multiplied by the average growth factor for North American pines, which was 4.5. Easy enough to figure. And so was the corollary deduction. These trees hadn't been logged for quite a long time. Maybe a couple of generations. Whatever the Institute was, it was in the middle of an old-growth forest, which meant in the middle of nowhere. As for the playground itself, his first thought was that if there was ever a prison exercise yard for kids between the ages of 6 and 16, it would look exactly like this. The girl, Iris, saw them and waved. She double-bounced on the trampoline, her ponytail flying, then took a final leap off the side and landed on the springy stuff with her legs spread and her knees flexed.
"Sha! Who you got there?"
"This is Luke Ellis," Kalisha said. "New this morning."
"Hey, Luke."
Iris walked over and offered her hand. She was a skinny girl, taller than Kalisha by a couple of inches. She had a pleasant, pretty face, her cheeks and forehead shiny with what Luke supposed was a mixture of sweat and bug dope.
"Iris Stanhope."
Luke shook with her, Aware that the bugs, minges were what they were called in Minnesota, he had no idea what they were called here, had begun to sample him.
Not pleased to be here, but I guess pleased to meet you.
I'm from Abilene, Texas. What about you?
Minneapolis? That's in...
I know where it is,
Iris said.
Land of a billion lakes or some shit like that.
George! Kalisha shouted. Where's your manners, young man? Come on over here.
Sure, but wait. This is important.
George towed the foul line at the edge of the blacktop, held the basketball to his chest, and began speaking in a low, tension-filled voice.
Okay, folks. After 7 hard-fought games, this is what it comes down to. Double overtime. Wizards trail the Celtics by 1 point, and George Iris, just in off the bench, has a chance to win this thing from the foul line. If he makes one, the Wizards tie it up yet again. If he makes both, he'll go down in history, probably get his picture in the Basketball Hall of Fame, maybe win a Tesla convertible.
That would have to be a custom job, Luke said. Tesla doesn't make a convertible, at least not yet.
George paid no attention.
Nobody ever expected Iris to be in this position, least of all, Iris. An eerie silence has fallen over the Capital One arena.
And then somebody farts,
Iris shouted. She put her tongue between her lips and blew a long, bubbly honk.
A real trumpet blast! Smelly, too!
Iris takes a deep breath. He bounces the ball twice, which is his trademark.
In addition to a motor mouth, George has a very active fantasy life,
Iris told Luke.
You get used to it.
George glanced toward the three of them.
Iris casts an angry look at a lone Celtics fan razzing him from center court. It's a girl who looks stupid, as well as amazingly ugly.
Iris blew another raspberry.
Now Iris faces the basket. Iris shoots.
Air ball.
Jesus, George, Kalisha said. That was horrible. Either tie the fucking game or lose it so we can talk. This kid doesn't know what happened to him.
Like we do, Iris said.
George flexed his knees and shot. The ball rolled around the rim, thought it over, and fell away.
Celtics win! Celtics win!
Iris yelled. She did a cheerleader jump and shook invisible pom-poms.
Now come over here and say hello to the new kid.
George came over, waving away bugs as he did so. He was short and stocky, and Luke thought his fantasies were the only place he would ever play pro basketball. His eyes were a pale blue that reminded Luke of the Paul Newman and Steve McQueen movies he and Rolf liked to watch on TCM. Thinking about that, the two of them sprawled in front of the TV and eating popcorn, made him feel sick.
Yo, kid, what's your name?
Luke Ellis?
I'm George Iris, but you probably knew that from these girls. I'm a god to them.
Kalisha held her head. Iris flipped him the bird.
A love god.
But Adonis, not Cupid, Luke said, getting into it a little. Trying, anyway. Adonis is the god of desire and beauty.
If you say so. How do you like the place so far? Sucks, doesn't it?
What is it? Kalisha calls it the Institute, but what does that mean?
Might as well call it Mrs. Sigsby's home for wayward psychic children.
Iris said and spit. This wasn't like coming in halfway through a movie. It was like coming in halfway through the 3rd season of a TV show, one with a complicated plot.
Who's Mrs. Sigsby?
The queen bitch, George said. You'll meet her, and my advice is don't sass her. She does not like to be sassed.
Are you TP or TK?
Iris asked. TK, I suppose. Actually, it was a lot more than a supposition. Sometimes things move around me, and since I don't believe in poltergeists, I'm probably doing it. But that can't be enough to... He trailed off. Can't be enough to land me here, was what he was thinking. But he was here.
TK positive? George asked.
He headed for one of the picnic tables. Luke followed, trailed by the two girls. He could calculate the rough age of the forest that surrounded them. He knew the names of 100 different bacteria. He could fill these kids in on Hemingway, Faulkner, or Voltaire, but he had still never felt more behind the curve. I have no idea what that means.
Kalisha said, Paz is what they call kids like me and George, the techs and caretakers and doctors. We're not supposed to know it,
But we do, Iris finished. It's what you call an open secret. TK and TP positives can do it when they want to, at least some of the time. The rest of us can't. For me, things only move when I'm pissed off or really happy or just startled. Then it's involuntary, like sneezing. So I'm just average. They call average TKs and TPs pinks.
Why? Luke asked.
Because if you're just regular, there's a little pink dot on the papers in your folder. We're not supposed to see what's in our folders either, but I saw in mine one day. Sometimes they're careless.
You want to watch your step, or they are apt to get careless all over your ass, Kalisha said.
Iris said, Pinks get more tests and more shots. I got the tank. It sucked, but not majorly.
What's the...
George gave Luke no chance to finish his question.
I'm TK Paz. No pink in my folder. Zero pink for this kid.
You seen your folder? Luke asked.
Don't need to. I'm awesome. Watch this.
There was no Swami-like concentration. The kid just stood there. But an extraordinary thing happened. It seemed extraordinary to Luke, at least, although neither of the girls seemed particularly impressed. The cloud of minges circling George's head blew backward, forming a kind of cometary tail, as if they had been struck by a gust of strong wind. Only there was no wind.
See, he said, TK Paz in action. Only it doesn't last long.
True enough, the minges were already back, circling him, and only kept off by the bug dope he was wearing.
That second shot you took at the basket, Luke said, could you have made it go in?
George shook his head, looking regretful.
I wish they'd bring in a really powerful TK Paz,
Iris said. Her meet the new kid excitement had collapsed. She looked tired and scared and older than her age, which Luke put at around 15.
One who could teleport us the fuck out of here.
She sat down on one of the picnic table's benches and put a hand over her eyes. Kalisha sat down and put an arm around her.
No, come on. It's going to be okay.
No, it isn't, Iris said. Look at this. I'm a pincushion.
She held out her arms. There were two band-aids on the left one and three on the right. Then she gave her eyes a brisk rub and put on what Luke supposed was her game face.
So, new kid, can you move things around on purpose?
Luke had never talked about the mind-over-matter stuff, also known as psychokinesis, except with his parents. His mom said it would freak people out if they knew. His dad said it was the least important thing about him. Luke agreed with both points. But these kids weren't freaked, and in this place it was important. That was clear.
No, I can't even wiggle my ears.
They laughed, and Luke relaxed.
The place was strange and scary, but at least these kids seemed okay. Once in a while, things move around, that's all. Dishes or silverware. Sometimes a door will shut by itself. Once or twice, my study lamp turned on. It's never anything big. Hell, I wasn't completely sure I was doing it. I thought maybe drafts or deep earth tremors.
They were all looking at him with wise eyes.
Okay, he said. I knew. My folks did too, but it was never a big deal.
Maybe it would have been, he thought, except for being freakishly smart. The kid accepted to not one but two colleges at the age of 12. Suppose you had a 7-year-old who could play piano like Van Cliburn. Would anyone care if that kid also could do a few simple card tricks? Or wiggle his ears? This was a thing he couldn't say to George, Iris, and Kalisha, though. It would sound like boasting.
You're right, it's not a big deal, Kalisha said vehemently. That's what's so fucked up about it. We're not the Justice League, or the X-Men.
Have we been kidnapped?
Praying for them to laugh. Praying for one of them to say, of course not.
Well, duh, George said.
Because you can make bugs go away for a second or two? Because,
he thought of the pan falling off the table at Rocket Pizza.
Because every now and then I walk into a room and the door closes behind me?
Well, George said, if they were grabbing people for their good looks, Iris and Shaw wouldn't be here.
Dinkleballs, Kalisha said.
George smiled.
An extremely sophisticated return right up there with Bite My Wiener.
Sometimes I can't wait for you to go to back half,
Iris said.
God will probably strike me dead for that, but...
Wait, Luke said. Just wait. Start from the beginning. This is the beginning, chum, said a voice from behind them. Unfortunately, it's also probably the end.
2.
Luke guessed the newcomer's age as 16, but later found out he was 2 years high. Nikki Wilhelm was tall and blue-eyed, with a head of unkempt hair that was blacker than black and cried out for a double dose of shampoo. He was wearing a wrinkled button-up shirt over a pair of wrinkled shorts. His white athletic socks were at half-mast, and his sneakers were dirty. Luke remembered Maureen saying he was like Pigpen in the Peanuts comic strips. The others were looking at him with wary respect, and Luke instantly got that. Kalisha, Iris, and George were no more happy to be here than Luke was himself, but they were trying to keep it positive. Except for the moment when Iris had wavered, they gave off a slightly goofy, making-the-best-of-it vibe. That wasn't the case with this guy. Nikki didn't look angry now, but it was clear he had been in the not-too-distant past. There was a healing cut on his swollen lower lip, the fading remains of a black eye, and a fresh bruise on one cheek. A brawler, then. Luke had seen a few in his time. There were even a couple at the Broderick School. He and Rolf steered clear of them. But if this place was the prison Luke was beginning to suspect it was, there would be no way to steer clear of Nikki Wilhelm. But the other three didn't seem to be afraid of him, and that was a good sign. Nikki might be pissed off at whatever purpose lay behind that bland institute name, but with his mates, he just seemed intense. Focused. Still, those marks on his face suggested unpleasant possibilities, especially if he wasn't a brawler by nature. Suppose they had been put there by an adult. A schoolteacher doing something like that, not just at the Broad, but almost anywhere, would get canned, probably sued, and maybe arrested. He thought of Kalisha saying, "Not in Kansas anymore, Toto." "I'm Luke Ellis." He held out his hand, not sure what to expect. Nikki ignored it and opened the green equipment cabinet. "You play chess, Ellis?" "These other three suck at it. Donna Gibson could give me at least a half-assed game, but she went to back half 3 days ago." "And we will see her no more," George said dolefully.
"I play," Luke said, "but I don't feel like it now. I want to know where I am and what goes on here."
Nick brought out a chessboard and a box with the armies inside. He set the pieces up rapidly, peering through the hair that had fallen across his eyes rather than brushing it back.
"You're in the Institute. Somewhere in the wilds of Maine. Not even a town, just map coordinates. TR-110.
Sha picked that up from a bunch of people. So did Donna and so did Pete Littlejohn. He's another TP that's gone to back half."
"Seems like Petey's been gone forever, but it was only last week," Kalisha said wistfully. "Remember all those zits and how his glasses kept sliding down?"
Nikki paid no attention. "The zookeepers don't try to hide it or deny it. Why would they? When they work on TP kids day in and day out. And they don't worry about the stuff they do want to keep secret, because not even Sha can go deep. And she's pretty good."
"I can score 90% on the Rhine cards most days," Kalisha said.
"Not boasting, just matter of fact.
And I could tell you your grandmother's name if you put it in the front of your mind. But the front is as far as I can go."
"My grandmother's name is Rebecca," Luke thought.
"Rebecca,"
Kalisha said, and when she saw Luke's expression of surprise, she burst into a fit of the giggles that made her look like the child she had been not so long ago.
"You've got the white guys," Nikki said. "I always play black."
"Nick's our honorary outlaw," George said.
"With the marks to prove it," Kalisha said. "Does him no good, but he can't seem to help it.
His room is a mess. Another act of childish rebellion that just makes more work for Maureen."
Nikki turned to the black girl, unsmiling. "If Maureen was really the saint you think she is, she'd get us out of here. Or blow the whistle to the nearest police."
Kalisha shook her head.
"Get real. If you work here, you're a part of it. Good or bad."
"Nasty or nice," George added. He looked solemn.
"Besides, the nearest police force is probably a bunch of deputy dogs and Hiram hoe handles miles from here," Iris said.
Since you seem to have nominated yourself head explainer, Nick, why don't you really fill the kid in? Jeepers, don't you remember how weird it is to wake up here in what looks like your own room?
Nick sat back and crossed his arms. Luke happened to see how Kalisha was looking at him and thought that if she ever kissed Nikki, it wouldn't be just to pass on a case of the chicken pox.
Okay, Ellis, I'll tell you what we know, or what we think we know. It won't take long. Ladies, feel free to chime in. George, keep your mouth shut if you feel a bullshit attack coming on.
Thanks a lot, George said, and after I let you drive my Porsche.
Kalisha's been here the longest, Nikki said, because of the chicken pox.
How many kids have you seen during that time, Shaw?
She considered.
Probably 25, maybe a few more.
Nikki nodded.
We come from everywhere.
Shaw's from Ohio. Iris is from Texas. George is from Glory Hole, Montana.
I'm from Billings, George said, a perfectly respectable town.
First off, they tag us like we were migrating birds or goddamn buffalo.
Nikki brushed his hair back and folded his earlobe forward, showing a circlet of bright metal half the size of a dime.
They examine us, they test us, they give us shots for dots, then they examine us again and do more tests. Pinks get more shots and more tests.
I got the tank,
Iris said again.
Whoopee for you, Nick said. If we're paws, they make us do stupid pet tricks. I myself happen to be TK paws, but George the motor mouth there is quite a bit better at it than I am. And there was one kid here, can't remember his name, who was even better than George.
Bobby Washington, Kalisha said. Little black kid, maybe 9. He could push your plate right off the table.
Been gone what, Nikki, 2 weeks?
A little less, Nikki said. If it was 2 weeks, it would have been before I came.
He was there one night at dinner, Kalisha said, and gone to back half the next day. Poof. Now you see him, now you don't.
I'll probably be next. I think they're about done with all their tests.
Same here, Nikki said sourly. They'll probably be glad to be rid of me.
Strike the probably on that one, George said.
They give us shots, Iris said. Some of them hurt, and some of them don't. Some of them do stuff to you, some don't. I spiked a fever after one of them and had the most god-awful headache. I was thinking maybe I caught Shaw's chicken pox, but it was gone after a day. They keep shooting you up until you see the dots and hear the hum.
You got off easy, Kalisha told her. A couple of kids. There was that one named Morty. Can't remember his last name.
The nose picker, Iris said. The one who used to hang with Bobby Washington. I can't remember Morty's last name either. He went to back half like 2 days after I got here.
Except maybe he didn't, Kalisha said. He wasn't here long at all. And he broke out in spots after one of those shots.
He told me so in the canteen. He said his heart was still beating like crazy, too.
I think maybe he got really sick.
She paused.
Maybe he even died.
George was looking at her with big-eyed dismay. Cynicism and teenage angst is fine, but tell me you don't really believe that.
Well, I sure don't want to, Kalisha said.
Shut up, all of you, Nikki said. He leaned forward over the board, staring at Luke.
They kidnap us, yes. Because we have psychic powers, yes.
How do they find us?
Don't know. But it's got to be a big operation because this place is big. It's a fucking compound. They've got doctors, technicians, ones who call themselves caretakers. It's like a small hospital stuck out here in the woods.
And security, Kalisha said.
Yeah, the guy in charge of that is a big bald fuck. Stackhouse is his name.
This is crazy, Luke said.
In America?
This isn't America. It's the kingdom of the Institute. When we go to the caf for lunch, Ellis, look out the windows. You'll see a lot more trees, but if you look hard, you'll also see another building. Green cinder block, just like this one. Blends in with the trees, I guess. Anyway, that's back half, where the kids go when all the tests and shots are done.
What happens there?
It was Kalisha who answered.
We don't know.
It was on the tip of Luke's tongue to ask if Maureen knew, then remembered what Kalisha had whispered in his ear. They listen.
We know what they tell us, Iris said. They say
everything is gonna be all right! Nikki shouted this so loudly and so suddenly that Luke recoiled and almost fell off the picnic bench. The black-haired boy got to his feet and stood looking up into the dusty lens of one of the cameras. Luke remembered something else Kalisha had said. When you meet Nikki, don't worry if he goes off on a rant. It's how he blows off steam.
You're like missionaries selling Jesus to a bunch of Indians who are so, so...
naive? Luke ventured.
Right, that.
Nikki was still staring up at the camera.
A bunch of Indians who are so naive, they'll believe anything, that if they give up their land for a handful of beads and fucking flea-ridden blankets, they'll go to heaven and meet all their dead relatives and be happy forever. That's us, a bunch of Indians naive enough to believe anything that sounds good, that sounds like a happy fucking ending.
He whirled back to them, hair flying, eyes burning, hands clenched into fists. Luke saw healing cuts on his knuckles. He doubted if Nikki had given as good as he'd gotten. He was only a kid, after all. But it seemed he had at least given somebody something. Do you think Bobby Washington had any doubts that his trials were over when they took him to back half? Or Pete Littlejohn? Jesus Christ, if brains were black powder, those two couldn't have blown their noses. He turned to the dirty overhead camera again. That he had nothing else upon which to vent his rage rendered it a touch ludicrous, but Luke admired him just the same. He had not accepted the situation.
Listen up, you guys. You can beat the shit out of me and you can take me to back half, but I'll fight you every step of the way. Nick Wilhelm doesn't trade for beads and blankets.
He sat down, breathing hard. Then he smiled, displaying dimples and white teeth and good-humored eyes. The sullen, brooding persona was gone as if it had never been there. Luke had no attraction to guys, but when he saw that smile, he could understand why Kalisha and Iris were looking at Nikki as if he were the lead singer in a boy band. I should probably be on their team instead of cooped up here like a chicken in a pen. I could sell this place better than Sigsbee and Hendrix and the other docs. I have conviction.
You certainly do, Luke said, but I'm not entirely sure what you were getting at.
Yeah, kind of went off on a sidetrack there, Nikki, George said. Nikki crossed his arms again. Before I whoop your ass at chess, new kid, let me review the situation. They bring us here. They test us. They shoot us full of God knows what and test us some more. Some kids get the tank. All kids get the weird eye test that makes you feel like you're going to pass out. We have rooms that look like our rooms at home, which is probably supposed to provide some kind of, I don't know, soothing for our tender emotions.
Psychological acclimation, Luke said. I guess that makes sense.
There's good food in the caf. We actually order off a menu, limited though it may be. Room doors aren't locked, so if you can't sleep, you can wander down there and pick up a midnight snack. They leave out cookies, nuts, apples, stuff like that. Or you can go to the canteen. The machines there take tokens, of which I have none, because only good little girls and boys get tokens. And I am not a good little boy. My idea of what to do with a Boy Scout is to drop him on his pointy little...
Come back, Kalisha said sharply.
Stop the shit.
Gotcha. Nick flashed her that killer smile, then returned his attention to Luke. There's plenty of incentive to be good and get tokens. There are snacks and sodas in the canteen, an extremely wide variety.
Cracker Jacks, George said dreamily. Ho-hos.
There are also cigarettes, wine coolers, and the hard stuff. Iris,
there's a sign that says, please drink responsibly. With kids as young as 10 pushing the buttons for Boone's Farm Blue Hawaiian and Mike's Hard Lemonade. How hilarious is that?
You've got to be kidding, Luke said.
But Kalisha and George were nodding. You can get buzzed. You can't get falling down drunk, Nikki said. Nobody has enough tokens for that.
True, Kalisha said. But we do have kids who stay buzzed as much as they can.
Maintenance drinkers, you mean? 10 and 11-year-old maintenance drinkers? Luke still couldn't believe it.
You're not serious.
I am. There are kids who do whatever they're told just so they can use the booze dispenser every day. I haven't been here long enough to, like, make a study of it,
but you hear stories from kids who were here before you.
Also, Iris said, we have plenty of kids who are working on a good tobacco habit.
It was ludicrous, but Luke supposed it also made a crazy kind of sense. He thought of the Roman satirist, Juvenal, who had said that if you gave the people bread and circuses, they'd be happy and not cause any trouble. He guessed the same might be true of booze and cigarettes, especially if you offered them to scared and unhappy kids who were locked up.
That stuff doesn't interfere with their tests?
Since we don't know what the tests are, it's hard to say, George told him. All they seem to want is for you to see the dots and hear the hum.
What dots? What hum?
You'll find out, George said. That part's not so bad. It's getting there that's the bitch.
I hate getting shots.
Nikki said, 3 weeks, give or take. That's how long most kids stay in front half. At least Shaw thinks so, and she's been here the longest. Then we go to back half. After that, this is the story, we get debriefed and our memories of this place are wiped somehow. He unfolded his arms and raised his hands to the sky, fingers spread. And after that, chillins, we go to heaven. Wash clean, except maybe for a pack-a-day habit. Hallelujah!
Back home to our parents is what he means,
Iris said quietly. Where we'll be welcomed with open arms, Nikki said.
No questions asked. Just welcome home and let's all go out to Chuck E. Cheese to celebrate.
Does that sound realistic to you, Ellis?
It didn't.
But our parents are alive, right? Luke didn't know how it sounded to the others, but to him his voice sounded very small. None of them answered, only looked at him. And really, that was answer enough.
3. There was a knock at Mrs. Sigsby's office door. She invited the visitor in without taking her eyes from her computer monitor. The man who entered was almost as tall as Dr. Hendricks, but 10 years younger and in far better shape, broad-shouldered and muscled out. His skull was smooth, shaved, and gleaming. He wore jeans and a blue work shirt, the sleeves rolled up to display his admirable biceps. There was a holster on one hip with a short metal rod sticking up.
The Ruby Red Group's here, if you want to talk to them about the Ellis operation.
Anything urgent or out of the ordinary on that, Trevor?
No, ma'am, not really. And if I'm intruding, I can come back later.
You're fine. Just give me a minute. Our residents are giving the new boy a backgrounder. Come and watch. The mixture of myth and observation is rather amusing, like something out of Lord of the Flies.
Trevor Stackhouse came around the desk. He saw Wilhelm, a troublesome little shit if there ever was one, on one side of a chessboard that was all set up and ready to go. The new intake was sitting on the other side. The girls were standing by, most of their attention fixed, as usual, on Wilhelm. Handsome, sullen, rebellious, a latter-day James Dean. He would be gone soon. Stackhouse couldn't wait for Hendricks to sign off on him.
How many people work here in all, do you think? The new boy asked.
Iris and Kalisha, also known as the chicken pox chick, looked at each other. It was Iris who answered.
50? I think at least that many. There's the doctors, techs and caretakers, the cafeteria staff,
2 or 3 janitors, Wilhelm said, and the housekeepers. Just Marine right now, because there's only the 5 of us, but when there's more kids, they add another couple of housekeepers. They might come over from back half, not sure about that.
With that many people, how can they keep the place a secret?
Ellis asked.
For one thing, where do they even park their cars?
Interesting, Stackhouse said. I don't think anyone ever asked that before.
Mrs. Sigsby nodded.
This one's very smart, and not just book smart, it looks like. Now hush, I want to hear this.
Must stay, Luke was saying.
You see the logic? Like a tour of duty, which would mean this is actually a government installation, like one of those black sites where they take terrorists to interrogate them.
Plus the old bag-over-the-head water cure, Wilhelm said.
I never heard of them doing that to any of the kids here, but I wouldn't put it past them.
They've got the tank, Ira said. That's their water cure. They put a cap on you and duck you under and take notes. It's actually better than the shots.
She paused.
At least it was for me.
They must swap out the employees in groups, Alice said. Mrs. Sigsby thought he was talking more to himself than the others. I bet he does that a lot, she thought.
It's the only way it would work.
Stackhouse was nodding.
Good deductions. Damn good. What is he, 12?
Read your report, Trevor.
She pushed a button on her computer and the screensaver appeared. A picture of her twin daughters and their double stroller, taken years before they acquired breasts, smart mouths, and bad boyfriends. Also a bad drug habit in Judy's case.
Ruby Red's been debriefed?
By me, personally. And when the cops check the kid's computer, they're going to find he's been looking at some stories about kids who kill their parents. Not a lot, just two or three.
Standard operating procedure, in other words.
Yes, ma'am. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Stackhouse gave her a grin she thought almost as charming as Wilhelm's when he turned it on at full wattage. Not quite, though. Their Nikki was a true babe magnet. For now, at least.
Do you want to see the team or just the operation report? Denny Williams is writing it, so it should be fairly readable.
If it all went smoothly, just the report. I'll have Rosalind get it to me.
Fine. What about Alverson? Any intel from her lately?
Do you mean, are Wilhelm and Kalisha canoodling yet?
Sigsby raised an eyebrow.
Is that germane to your security mission, Trevor?
I could give shit one if those two were canoodling. In fact, I'm rooting for them to go ahead and lose their virginity, assuming they still have it, while they've got a chance. But from time to time, Alverson does pick up things that are germane to my mission, like her conversation with the Washington boy.
Maureen Alverson, the housekeeper who actually seemed to like and sympathize with the Institute's young subjects, was in reality a stool pigeon. Given the little bits of tittle-tattle she brought in, Mrs. Sigsby thought spy too grand a term. Neither Kalisha nor any of the other TPs had tipped to this, because Maureen was extremely good at keeping her way of making a little extra money far below the surface. What made her especially valuable was the carefully planted idea that certain areas of the Institute, the south corner of the caf and a small area near the vending machines in the canteen, to name just a couple, were audio surveillance dead zones. Those were the places where Alverson gleaned the kids' secrets. Most were paltry things, but sometimes there was a nugget of gold in the dross. The Washington boy, for instance, who had confided to Maureen that he was thinking about committing suicide. Nothing lately, Sigsby said. I'll inform you if she passes on something I feel would be of interest to you, Trevor.
Okay. I was just asking.
Understood. Now please go. I have work to do.
4. Fuck this shit, Nikki said, sitting down at the bench again. He finally brushed the hair out of his eyes. The ding-dong's gonna go pretty soon, and I gotta get an eye test and look at the white wall after lunch. Let's see what you got, Ellis. Make a move.
Luke had never felt less like playing chess. He had 1,000 other questions, mostly about shots for dots, but maybe this wasn't the time.
There was such a thing as information overload, after all. He moved his king's pawn 2 squares. Nikki countered. Luke responded with his king's bishop, threatening Nikki's king's bishop's pawn. After a moment's hesitation, Nikki moved his queen out 4 diagonal squares, and that pretty much sealed the deal. Luke moved his own queen, waited for Nikki to make some move that didn't matter one way or the other, then slid his queen down next to Nikki's king, nice and cozy. Nikki frowned at the board.
Checkmate? In 4 moves? Are you serious?
Luke shrugged. It's called scholar's mate, and it only works if you're playing white. Next time you'll see it coming in counter. Best way is to move your queen's pawn forward 2 or your king's pawn forward 1.
If I do that, can you still beat me?
Maybe.
The diplomatic answer. The real one was, of course. Holy Joe.
Nikki was still studying the board. That's fucking slick. Who taught you?
I read some books.
Nikki looked up, seeming to really see Luke for the first time, and asked Kalisha's question.
How smart are you, kid?
Smart enough to beat you,
Iris said, which saved Luke having to answer. At that moment, a soft two-note chime went off. The ding-dong.
Let's go to lunch, Kalisha said. I'm starving. Come on, Luke. Loser puts the game away.
Nikki pointed a finger at her and mouthed bang bang, but he was smiling as he did it. Luke got up and followed the girls. At the door to the lounge area, George caught up with him and grabbed his arm. Luke knew from his sociology reading, as well as from personal experience, that kids in a group had a tendency to fall into certain easily recognizable pigeonholes. If Nikki Wilhelm was this group's rebel, then George Iris was its class clown. Only now he looked as serious as a heart attack. He spoke low and fast.
Nick's cool. I like him and the girls are crazy about him. Probably you'll like him too, and that's okay, but don't make him a role model. He won't accept that we're stuck here. But we are. So pick your battles.
The dots, for instance, when you see him, say so. When you don't, say that. Don't lie. They know.
Nikki caught up with them.
What you talking about, Georgie boy?
He wanted to know where babies come from, Luke said. I told him to ask you.
Oh, Jesus, another fucking comedian. Just what this place needs.
Nikki grabbed Luke by the neck and pretended to strangle him, which Luke hoped was a sign of liking. Maybe even respect.
Come on, let's eat.
5. What his new friends called the canteen was part of the lounge, across from the big TV. Luke wanted a close look at the vending machines, but the others were moving briskly, and he still didn't get the chance. He did, however, note the sign Iris had mentioned. Please drink responsibly. So maybe they hadn't been just yanking his chain about the booze. Not Kansas, and not Pleasure Island, he thought. It's Wonderland. Someone came into my room in the middle of the night and pushed me down the rabbit hole. The calf wasn't as big as the one at the Broderick School, but almost. The fact that the 5 of them were the only diners made it seem even bigger. Most of the tables were 4 tops, but there were a couple of larger ones in the middle. One of these had been set with 5 places. A woman in a pink smock top and matching pink trousers came over and filled their water glasses. Like Maureen, she was wearing a name tag. Hers said, Norma.
How are you, my chickens? She asked.
Oh, we're plucking right along, George said brightly. How about you?
Doing fine, Norma said.
Don't have a get-out-of-jail-free card on you by any chance.
Norma gave him a cruise control smile and went back through the swinging door that presumably led to the kitchen.
Why do I bother? George said. My best lines are wasted in here. Wasted, I tell you.
He reached for the stack of menus in the center of the table and handed them around. At the top was the day's date. Below that was starters, buffalo wings or tomato bisque, entrees, bison burger or American chop suey, and finishers, apple pie a la mode, or something called magic custard cake. 6 soft drinks were listed.
You can get milk, but they don't bother putting it on the menu, Kalisha said. Most kids don't want it unless they have cereal for breakfast.
Is the food really good? Luke asked. The prosaic nature of the question, as if they were maybe at a sandals resort where the meals were included, brought back his sense of unreality and dislocation.
Yes, Iris said. Sometimes they weigh us. I put on 4 pounds.
Fattening us up for the kill, Nikki said, like Hansel and Gretel.
On Friday nights and Sunday noons, there are buffets, Kalisha said. All you can eat.
Like Hansel and fucking Gretel, Nikki repeated.
He made a half turn, looking up at a camera in the corner.
Come on back, Norma. I think we're ready.
She returned at once, which only increased Luke's sense of unreality. But when his wings and chop suey came, he ate heartily. He was in a strange place. He was afraid for himself and terrified about what might have happened to his parents. But he was also 12. A growing boy.
6. They must have been watching whoever they were, because Luke had barely finished the last bite of his custard cake before a woman dressed in another of those pink quasi-uniforms appeared at his side. Gladys, her name badge said.
Luke, come with me, please.
He looked at the other four. Kalisha and Iris wouldn't meet his gaze. Nikki was looking at Gladys, arms once more folded across his chest and wearing a faint smile.
Why don't you come back later, honey, like around Christmas? I'll kick you under the mistletoe.
She paid no attention.
Luke? Please?
George was the only one looking directly at him, and what Luke saw on his face made him think of what he'd said before they came in from the playground. Pick your battles. He got up.
See you guys later, I guess.
Kalisha mouthed soundless words at him.
Shots for Dot.
Gladys was small and pretty, but for all Luke knew, she was a black belt who could throw him over her shoulder if he gave her any trouble. Even if she wasn't, they were watching. And he had no doubt reinforcements would show up in a hurry. There was something else as well, and it was powerful. He had been raised to be polite and obey his elders. Even in this situation, those were hard habits to break. Gladys led him past the bank of windows Nikki had mentioned. Luke looked out, and yes, there was another building out there. He could barely see it through the screening trees, but it was there all right. Back half. He looked over his shoulder before leaving the calf, hoping for some reassurance. A wave or even a smile from Kalisha would do. There was no wave, and no one was smiling. They were looking at him the way they had in the playground, when he had asked if their parents were alive. Maybe they didn't know about that. Not for sure, but they knew where he was going now. Whatever it was, they had already been through it. 7.
Gosh, what a pretty day, huh?
Gladys said as she led him along the cinder block corridor and past his room. The corridor continued down another wing. More doors, more rooms. But they turned left into an annex that appeared to be your basic elevator lobby. Luke, ordinarily quite good at make nice conversation, said nothing. He was pretty sure it was what Nikki would do in this situation.
The bugs, though. Whew!
She waved away invisible insects and laughed.
You'll want to wear plenty of bug dope, at least until July.
When the dragonflies hatch out.
Yes, exactly.
She trilled a laugh.
Where are we going? You'll see.
She waggled her eyebrows as to say, don't spoil the surprise. The elevator doors opened. Two men in blue shirts and pants got off. One was Joe, the other Haddad. They both carried iPads.
Hi, guys,
Gladys said brightly.
Hey, girl, Haddad said. How's it going?
Fine, Gladys chirped.
How about you, Luke? Joe asked. Adjusting okay?
Luke said nothing.
Silent treatment, huh? Haddad was grinning. That's okay for now. Later, maybe not so much. Here's the thing, Luke. Treat us right and we'll treat you right. Go along to get along, Joe added. Words of wisdom. See you later, Gladys?
You bet. You owe me a drink.
If you say so.
The men went on their way. Gladys escorted Luke into the elevator. There were no numbers and no buttons. She said B, then produced a card from her pants pocket and waved it at a sensor. The door shut. The car descended, but not far.
B, crooned a soft female voice from overhead. This is B.
Gladys waved her card again. The doors opened on a wide hall lit with translucent ceiling panels. Soft music played, what Luke thought of as supermarket music. A few people were moving about, some pushing trolleys with equipment on them, one carrying a wire basket that might have contained blood samples. The doors were marked with numbers, each prefixed with the letter B. A big operation, Nikki had said. A compound. That had to be right, because if there was an underground B level, it stood to reason there must be a C level, maybe even a D and E. You'd say it almost had to be a government installation, Luke thought. But how could they keep an operation this big a secret? Not only is it illegal and unconstitutional, it involves kidnapping children. They passed an open door, and inside Luke saw what appeared to be a break room. There were tables and vending machines. No sign reading, "Please drink responsibly," though. Three people were sitting at one of the tables, a man and two women. They were dressed in regular clothes, jeans and button-up shirts, and drinking coffee. One of the women, the blondish one, seemed familiar. At first he didn't know why. Then he thought of a voice saying, "Sure, whatever you want." It was the last thing he remembered before waking up here. "You," he said, and pointed at her. "It was you." The woman said nothing, and her face said nothing. But she looked at him. She was still looking when Gladys closed the door.
"She was the one," Luke said. "I know she was."
"Just a little further," Gladys said. "It won't take long. Then you can go back to your room. You'd probably like to rest. First days can be exhausting."
"Did you hear me? She was the one who came into my room. She sprayed something in my face."
No answer, just the smile again. Luke found it a little creepier each time Gladys flashed it. They reached a door marked B-31.
"Behave and you'll get 5 tokens, she said.
She reached into her other pocket and brought out a handful of metal circles that looked like quarters, only with an embossed triangle on either side.
"See? Got them right here."
She knocked a knuckle on the door. The blue-clad man who opened it was Tony. He was tall and blonde, handsome except for one slightly squinted eye. Luke thought he looked like a villain in a James Bond movie.